Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the monthly Scarlet Leadership Institute Lunch and Leadership Conference Call. If you would like a copy of today's slides, please send me an email at tom@scarletleadership.com. So at this point, I'd like to turn it over to the world-famous Joe Scarlet.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another one of our calls in the CEO series. I usually at this point tell you when the next call is going to be, but I'd like to tell you that we're going to take the month of December off. We're going to send out a schedule for next year in a couple of weeks, and then we'll be having a call every month next year with the possible exception of December. With that, I'd like to turn it over to our hostess, Mary Fink. Mary?
Thank you, Joe. And before I introduce our guest, I want to say we have had some great discussions this year. And it's been our CEO lessons learned sessions, and we have just had some great guests. So thanks to all of you who have listened, and thanks to all of you who have participated, because I think it was a fun schedule for us and a fun idea that we had, and I think it was just we've learned a lot. We've had some great conversations. Today we have with us Beth Torres, who is the CEO of the Make-A-Wish Foundation here in Middle Tennessee. And she is going to tell us a little bit about her organization, and then she's going to talk to us a little bit about her leadership and lessons that she's learned. Beth, welcome.
Thank you so much, Mary. It's nice to be here.
It's good to have you. So tell us a little bit about Make-A-Wish. I mean, we've seen the TV ads, but specifically what you do and some things that some news that you have about your organization.
Perfect. So I'm the CEO of Make-A-Wish here in Middle Tennessee. We have 38 counties in the middle of the state that we're responsible for raising the money and granting all the wishes to kids who are eligible. And kids are eligible for a wish if they're between 2.5 and 18 and they're fighting a life-threatening medical condition. So one of the biggest misnomers or misconceptions of Make-A-Wish is that all of our kids are terminal, and they're just not. So many of our kids are going to survive and thrive because modern medicine is great right now. But in the process, they're going to go through a really horrible, sucky time. And we talk a lot about the kids' path being they were healthy, normal kids, and then they're given this diagnosis that turns their entire world upside down. And they don't get to go to school, and they don't get to go to ballet lesson or baseball practice or Boy Scouts anymore. And their life becomes hospital centralized, and they go for chemo, and they go for surgeries, and their life just becomes very isolated. And in the process, the entire family is affected. So by the time Make-A-Wish comes into their life, we tell the child, you can have or be or meet anyone you want, and they get to start dreaming. And we know that there's an amazing impact on the human spirit because they're given hope and something to look forward to and something positive to talk about. And the power of that wish is it changes not only the child, but all the kids around them that know that they're sick. It changes the parents. It changes the family dynamic. So we really do look at ourselves as the human spirit side of the healing. And the wishes of these kids are amazing. Here in Middle Tennessee, we think there are about 230 kids diagnosed every single year with a life-threatening medical condition. And we're granting this year, over the next 12 months, we'll grant about 150 wishes, just under that.
Wow.
And it'll take about $2.5 million to do it.
That is amazing. So tell me a little bit about how you work with the parents. I'm guessing a lot of times that's how they get to you.
Yeah, parents are big referral sources. Kids can refer themselves and then medical professionals. And so there's a lot of education. For the longest time, when Make-A-Wish showed up, they thought they were meeting the angel of death. And what we were saying is the doctors are too scared to tell you your kid's going to die, so Make-A-Wish is here to tell you they can have a final wish. But we work with the parents to educate them and remind them that this is about the child. And it's hard. We just had a great wish mom, one of our favorite moms, and she said we show up at her door with two volunteers, and the volunteers say, Micah, what do you want your wish to be? And mom's sitting there saying, please say Hawaii, make it Hawaii. And Micah wanted to go to D.C. He's a big history buff, and he loves that. He calls himself an old soul. And so it is about the child setting that goal, making that wish, and the family all benefiting from it.
Absolutely.
How big is Make-A-Wish? Is it just the United States, or is it all over the world?
Great question. We're an international organization, so there are 63 chapters here in the U.S., and we're in 49 other countries as affiliates. So we are global in every sense of the word.
That is amazing. Well, Beth won't tell you, but we'll tell you, and we'll get her to tell you now, that they have won an award, and we're very proud of you, so tell us about it.
So my fabulous staff has just won the Infinite Wish Award, and we won at the global conference a couple weeks ago in Anaheim, and the award is given to a chapter who grants a wish that's not only an outstanding wish, and creative, clever, well-executed, but also has community engagement. So we had a little boy from here in Middle Tennessee whose wish was to be a pirate. And as anyone knows, you can't just wake up and be a pirate. There's some training that goes on. So we sent Albie to St. John, and the entire island got involved. And they dressed up as pirates, and they went out and they spent a day teaching him how to be a pirate, how to fight with swords, how to read treasure maps, how to talk to wenches and walk the plank. And the next day, he came out and had to find the treasure. And so between the work that my staff did and the staff in Southern Florida that works with St. John, we really got a lot of people involved. And those people now know the power of a wish. So, yeah, great wish, great staff, so fun, and winning a global award doesn't stink either.
No, it doesn't. You must be on an emotional roller coaster all the time. I can imagine the lows, but also the highs that come with it. Do you have one more story you'll tell us?
Yeah, they have lots of stories. I'll tell you as many stories as you want to hear. Yeah, I think we're on the journey with the families on this, and we usually come in after the shock has started to wear off a little bit, but you're really starting to see the wear on the families. And we hear kids who say, my sister got sick and my mom and dad stopped spending time with us because they spent all their time with the sick child. So we definitely get to see both sides. We're totally the happy side of this. And a lot of the tears that we have in our office, and we do cry in our office, are happy tears because you watch how this changes their life and improves what they're going through. So it is an emotional roller coaster. Last night I gave a presentation and a gentleman walked up and started crying and said that his nephew in Michigan isn't going to get his wish because he'll pass away before it can happen. And that's the part that I never want my staff to hear. I never want to know that we didn't get to grant a wish.
Yeah. Wow. Pretty amazing organization.
Absolutely fabulous. And I want to go through the – I would like to become a pirate too. So
perfect. We can do it. We know how to train people now.
Okay. So now I want to know a little bit more about you and your leadership experience. So tell us a little bit about your experience and history.
Sure. So graduated from college and went into corporate America. And one of the things I think is really important is that shaped how I make decisions. I was the child of entrepreneurs. I was working in corporate America all before coming to the nonprofit sector. And we need more good people in the nonprofit sector. We need more business people in this sector. And from what I learned in corporate America, I was working in sports marketing. I was working with people who were cutting edge, who wanted things to be fast, who wanted it to be efficient. And so we learned a lot of efficiencies. We learned a lot about how to be better, faster, stronger. And those are not traditionally things we see in the nonprofit sector. And this is a sector that is known to move slowly, to be very bureaucratic, to be very consensus-driven. And so by the time I made this shift 8 years ago, started in fundraising here with Junior Achievement in Middle Tennessee, really came in 2007, and the economy was great. And so you could walk in and say, Joe Scarlett, you should know what we're doing. Write us a check. We would get a check. I go back to the office. I thought this was easy. And in 2008, when we started to see the economy shift, in 2009, we were actually doing okay because we were still in every corporate's budget. And as long as we were in the budget, we were okay. When they did the next budget cycle is when we started to see things fall off in the giving. And what we learned were we weren't diversified enough, and we were relying too heavy on the corporate for funding, and we had to get more individuals involved. We had to start talking to people that could fund us. We had to get more grassroots. It was no longer the time of a $50,000 gift or a $100,000 gift. How many small gifts can you get? So I was lucky to work for Trent Klingon Smith, who allowed us to be innovative, who allowed us to take some risks and challenge. And at that point, I went back to Vandy and got my MBA and was lucky enough to receive a grant to do that. So the Center for Nonprofit Management had partnered with Owen, and they offered this grant so that people could bring these business principles into the nonprofit sector. And graduated in 2011, I got a call from Headhunter, and she said, would you consider a CEO position with a mid-sized nonprofit? And I said, no, I love my job, but thanks for calling. And I said, can you tell me who it is? And she said, no. And the blind search, it was nationwide. My name had come up, and I said, well, if anything else comes up, call me. And 2 days later, she called back, and she said, I can tell you who it is. And she said, Make-A-Wish. And there are just some brands and some organizations that you just know by reputation. They have it together. And I said, I'll send you a resume. If it doesn't work, no problem. Like, I love my job, but if it works, let's do this. I went through a grueling interview process and got the job, and I'm grateful every day. And this is the best job that I've ever had.
How long has this one been in existence?
So our chapter's been here since 2000, and really has been through a lot of transition. I mean, we're still very young when you think about it. Make-A-Wish has only been around since 1980. So as an organization, we're a young organization. But here in Middle Tennessee, we're one of the youngest chapters.
Tell us about the grueling interview process. I'm just curious.
Yeah. There's nothing that I had seen in corporate America prepared me for what I went through here. And the truth is, what I came to learn later was that I was going to be the fourth CEO in 3 years. that they'd been through a lot of transition at the top. And because of that, you know, Make-A-Wish America was starting to see this across the country, that change and that turnover we know happens in the nonprofit sector. So they started to come up with great requirements. You have to have an external search firm find every CEO. There are board members that are involved on the search committee. There are national employees who sit on the committee. And then there's a peer CEO. So they really started to vet people in a different way. And I think also because our board was so engaged and had been through so much change, they really wanted to feel good about this decision. And so on the one hand, you know, as the person going through it, you get it's frustrating, right? And you can't understand why they could ask you another question or you could do another presentation. What was a benefit to me was I got to see what the board really wanted, and we got to spend a lot of quality time together and understand where they thought the organization was and where it could go. And it was because this board wanted growth that the job was attractive. And so I don't think all of this would have come out if we hadn't had, you know, phone interviews and in-person and presentation and personality inventories and all of the things that went into the interview process. But it was also a sort of a display of commitment to this board was going to totally support the CEO that they brought in, and this was their first way of showing that.
Outstanding. Outstanding. What's the thing that you like most about being a leader? What do you like most about being in charge?
Oh, gosh.
There are definitely some downsides.
Yeah, totally. So what I learned about myself coming out of business school was I didn't want to be in charge. I really wanted to be someone's number two. I wanted someone who had big vision, clear goals, wanted to be successful, and I wanted to come in and help them. So quite honestly, when someone came and said, would you be the CEO, my knee-jerk reaction was no. I mean, this is not the role that I saw myself in.
Not now anyway.
Right, totally. I didn't think it was who I wanted to be. I didn't think I would flourish in this way. Because I realized partway through the interview process that I was actually working for a board of directors who did have that clear vision, that I could align myself with what I thought were my strengths and use their talent and their vision as well. So I think for me, my favorite part of being a leader is watching it all come together. You make all these mistakes when you're a leader, right? You take all these risks and you try all these things, and sometimes you turn around and go, oh, that was stupid, we aren't going to do that again, or that was not my brightest hire, decision, move, whatever, and you make a change. But when it starts to work and you start to see everyone clicking, that's the best part. And then you realize if they're getting this now, we can move on to the next challenge. So I like the fact that when it's working, it's fun. And when it's not working, it's not fun.
No, it's not.
No.
But it's such a high when it is.
Yeah.
If you have questions, callers, hit *7. Or if you're online, enter your question in the box and hit submit. We'll take questions all along.
Perfect.
Okay. What do you think are your greatest challenges? And maybe as a leader, but also maybe in this position.
Yeah, I think we have two. I have personal challenges, and then I have industry challenges. So for the nonprofit industry, we don't recruit the best talent because we don't pay well. And so we get limited by who we can work with.
Is that real, or is that just out there as sort of information that we've known from the past, but is it not getting better?
It's totally getting better. And what you're seeing is as more business people move into the nonprofit sector, they want that, not just for themselves, because the fun part about the nonprofit sector is you get a lot of selfless people. And so they don't just want more money for themselves. They want it for their staff. They know it's good for retention. So they're looking at what are the benefits. How do you train people? You know, in corporate America, we invest in training. We pay to get people to learn Excel. We pay to have them learn time management. We don't do that in nonprofit, so we don't have the benefit of places just like the Scarlet Leadership Institute. We don't train them. We don't put that money aside. You're starting to see that now. And I think the more business people we get, the better we're going to get at that. I love that I'm part of a major global organization because we have some resources that aren't afforded to local nonprofits. Boards are important. You've got to have a strong board. You've got to have all of that clicking at the same time. So I think that industry-wide, we definitely have some challenges, stereotypes, some of the misconceptions, but some of them are very valid concerns. Personally, I think I'm a recovering type A personality with the occasional really bad backslide. Yeah, totally. They should have a 12-step program for us. I'm a control freak, not in that I want to do everything, but I sometimes get really wrapped up in my own vision on how it should come out. And one of the things I'm learning and I'm working on is how do you let go? And just because someone does it differently than the way I do it, it could still work.
There are multiple writings.
Yes, right.
Yes.
And that comes with time and experience.
Yes, it does.
How big is your organization?
So here in Middle Tennessee, there are 9 of us on staff. Yep, we have 9 paid employees. I have a board of 21 people, and I have 200 volunteers. So we're mighty, but we're small.
and as you grow in that kind of job, you have to let go.
You
got to say,
where have you been? This is advice you have to hear every day.
As a leader, you want to be able to have enough time to be able to look over the hill and around the corner, which is what you really need to do as a leader. And I can see that you're getting there.
You know, I read What Got You Here Won't Get You There. And it's funny because it was recommended to me, and I sort of did that thing where you go, well, of course, right? That's common sense. But when you realize that all of those things that made you feel validated and safe and secure coming up, working your way through management, no longer work at the next level.
Right.
And so it is, there's a constant reminder of myself to say, I don't have to control this, or we can get there a lot of ways. And by the way, I don't have to control the checklist anymore. So for me, that's the biggest struggle that I'm up against.
Right.
I'm aware of it. In our office, we talk about owning your crazy. Everyone's got a thing, an ism, whatever it is. We want them out there. And so if I start to say I'm getting controlling, anyone on my staff can call me out on that.
Oh,
that's okay.
That's great. It's interesting. You mentioned the book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There, which was written by Marshall Goldsmith.
Mm-hmm.
And Marshall has been an instructor in our every one but one of our executive classes since we got started. So he's been a sort of a premier speaker for us. And since you let me get into this, I'll throw a little commercial in here. Our next executive class will be starting in late January, and we're about two-thirds filled up now, or three-quarters filled up. So if any of you are interested, there's still room there, and it's we believe it's the best leadership education or emerging executives that you can find anywhere.
Definitely.
Commercial's over.
Good, because I want to go back to something that Beth said and have you comment on it, because what I hear you talk about all the time are delegation and communication skills and rewarding people, recognizing people. And so take a minute. We'll have a teachable moment here and give Beth a little advice about the delegation part.
I learned a tremendous lesson early in life, early in my business career, about delegating. And you probably heard me say this before, but I was doing manual tasks. And when the store manager dragged me back into the ladies' coat department, made me look down there, and I saw there were a bunch of kids working for me who were sitting on a cash register, just telling stories because I was not leading, I was working. And he used the message with me. He said, Joe, think of yourself as an orchestra leader, and you're in charge of all these different personalities playing all these different instruments, and it's your job to get them all to play a good tune. So you, in effect, have to get a group of people of different personalities who are doing different tasks to all work together to produce a cohesive result. And that changed the way I looked at business, and I looked at leadership, I should say, and I became a delegator from that point forward. And I'm happy to tell you that and proud to tell you, and most people don't really believe this, but I made very few decisions as the CEO of Tractor Supply. I pushed decision-making down the ladder as far as I could so that I made high-level personnel decisions with a team of people. I made high-level strategic decisions with a team of people. But otherwise, I did like to decide where to go for lunch. But otherwise, I pushed all that decision-making down the ladder. And when you're responsible for something and you make the decision, you're going to make it happen. Whereas if your boss makes the decision and then tells you to make it happen, you're not as committed. So push decision. Probably the best words I ever heard from my predecessor and mentor was push decision-making as far down the ladder as you can.
Absolutely. And as someone who has worked with Joe and for Joe for a while, I can tell you he's got that delegation thing going. So, Beth, what's the toughest decision you've had to make?
All the tough ones are HR. Anytime you're dealing with human capital in any way, it is really challenging. Process decisions are easy because there is almost always a right and wrong way in the moment with the information you have. Humans not that way. You know, there's the right decision for the organization, but you have to take into account everybody that's affected. And you don't make hiring or firing decisions without the impact on the entire organization. So for me, HR decisions are the hardest. They're also the ones that keep me up at night, make me think. They're the ones that probably run most of our senior staff meetings, is how do you keep people motivated? How are people doing? How's the staff feeling? Are they overwhelmed? What can we do to help them? What resources do they need? So those are always the hardest.
What kind of emotional support? I would think there'd be a lot of need for emotional assistance or emotional support in a situation where you're working with sick children.
Right. So we're about a, you know, we're a step removed. My staff is one step removed from the kids themselves. Our volunteers are in the front line, and we're just starting to have those conversations. So we're talking about how do you support volunteers doing that. As a staff, we want to have those conversations. And we have challenging families and easy families and families that are going through a tougher time than the average family, and we really try to encourage conversation. You know, I have a really young staff, and for a lot of my staff, this is their very first job. And it's a job unlike any other.
So they maybe are not equipped to take
care
of all those issues.
Absolutely.
Who takes care of the caretakers?
Right. And that's really where we're starting to see. I mean, that's when we talk about senior staff. You could have one of our wish coordinators could have a really trying family, tough family situation, tough wish, things go wrong, and you'll watch them get emotionally beat down for a while. And it's our responsibility to go back, check in with them, find out if they need something. Do they need time off? Or do they just really need to be with us a little bit more and kind of work through it? So
mature in the role. Maturity in the role is so important everywhere.
Everywhere. Yep. From us all the way to the front line. I don't care who it is. And you want that evolution.
Right.
And so how do you measure it? How do you inspire it? How do you create it?
Exactly.
Beth, I have a question that I get asked from time to time, and I don't necessarily have a good answer to it. When you have volunteers, how do you lead them? How do you motivate them?
Yeah.
Because it's different when you're different when from when you're paying somebody.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think one of the shifts we're trying to make is to not treat them different than paid staff. We have to set clear expectations. I think the biggest misconception we do as volunteers, and I do this in the volunteer work I've done, in recruiting other people, is we try to make it sound easy and fun. We want everything to be easy. So we say it'll take you this much time, but we really mean three times that. And it won't take, you know, we'll have to have weekends, but really it takes every third weekend. So we're looking at how can we be honest about what it takes to be a good volunteer.
The never lost.
Yeah, exactly. We look at setting the expectation, holding them accountable. You know, again, the misconception with volunteer work is you can't fire a volunteer. Well, you know what?
Yes, you can.
They're the front line for us. They're our brand as much as any paid staff member. So if they're not doing the right job, if they're not doing this the way that is brand compliant, that makes us look and feel good, we got to make those choices. So we're really looking at how do we take those same management principles. Only now, look, the conversation we just had is I'm managing people who are in their 20s and early 30s, and they're managing volunteers. So how do you teach those frontline staff or young staff to manage people, not just manage them and motivate them, but a lot of them are older than my staff. So there's a lot of training that has to go on to make volunteers feel engaged. And we've got to start using volunteers where their skill set is. So
most of the people on this call are in business today. And from time to time, people ask me about, they talk about maybe I would like to get into the nonprofit world. What would you say to people who are in business today and are thinking about moving into the nonprofit world? What should they consider, and when is it a good decision? When is it not a good decision?
It was the flat answer, don't do it, probably too broad stroke. Yeah, I think there are some things you have to think about. This is such a personal decision. And it's more than I did it thinking, honestly, that the nonprofit sector would be easier. You know, corporate America is stressful. You've got an answer to people, and you've got goals, and you've got all these things. And so I thought the nonprofit would be this nicer, kinder, gentler space. Well, it's not. Our responsibility is actually bigger, because in the for-profit world, someone gives you money and you give them a product or service and they come back to you and go, I liked it or I didn't. I'm going to engage with you again or I'm not. With us, you give me money, I'm going to go spend it on someone else. And so my responsibility now is to both the person who gave me the money and where I'm spending it. So I think some of the things you have to think about are you doing it because you're looking for an escape? Or are you looking because you are feeling called to move in that direction? I even talk with our young staff about you want to change jobs when you're feeling called to something, not running from something. And so there's that reality of why are you making this choice? I think we need more business people. Mm-hmm. So I want to see people who have tons of business experience coming into this nonprofit sector. You are going to have to make sacrifices. The perks aren't as good. We don't have big bonus checks at the end of the year, you know, where you turn around and buy a car and pay off a house and go on vacation. But there is an amazing reward in what we do, and I love it because you can see it instantly. There's an instant gratification in what we do because you're affecting a life at every turn. And the life isn't just the wish kid for us. I'm changing a donor's life. Every time we engage someone in the mission, and every time they meet a wish kid, their life changes. And so we really have a great responsibility. I want people to serve on boards. I want them to volunteer. I want them to really get in and engage. I want everybody to give in this community. I don't care if it's Make-A-Wish. I want it to be Make-A-Wish. Mm-hmm. But give your time, your money, your talent. give them something you're passionate about, and let's move the entire community forward.
Let me put you on the spot here a little bit.
Great.
If anybody's on the call who is thinking about this and would like a little coaching, I'm sure Beth will be happy to talk to you. So
totally, anytime.
Call Make-A-Wish and ask for Beth. Also, for those of you on the call who might have interest in serving on nonprofit boards, there's a tremendous demand for those kinds of things. And if you have any questions about it, just ask around. There are lots and lots of opportunities for good business people to serve on nonprofit boards of all kinds.
Yeah, and board governance is going to be a hot topic.
Right.
And it's always been important and valuable, but we're really looking at it now. They are truly the people that make our organization sustainable. And the staff is in it every day. The board is supposed to be the visionary leaders. Mm-hmm. And I ask my board to block so we can rush. So can they get 3 to 5 years out and really start looking at things so that my staff can live in that 1 to 3 year out space? And we need smart people. And I want people that take it seriously. Mm-hmm. I want them engaged. If you are sitting on a board and you're not going to meetings, roll off and make space for someone else. If you're not giving valuable advice, roll off and let someone come on.
Absolutely.
And it's okay to quit a board. We're okay with that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we've kind of talked around some of these, but is there anything else that you would say in terms of lessons you've learned?
I learn every day
that I didn't know yesterday or last week or 6 years ago?
Yeah, every day. So I describe my first year as a CEO is I would get in the car after work, and one day I'd be like, I'm the best CEO that ever walked the planet. I've got this. Everybody should want me. And the very next day I would sit in the car and say, I have no idea what I'm doing. Like, I just do not understand. I can't make this work. I think the lessons are sometimes they're slow and a little bit painful. It's prioritizing. Those things that you think are such a fire drill now, with time and experience, you start to put them in perspective. So there's constant learning. And the minute that you think you've got the best process for something, something comes along and challenges it, and you have to make that change. And so I'm a capitalist at heart, and I'm pretty honest about that. So I like the competition. I want people to expect a lot out of us, and then I want us to rise to that challenge.
Okay. We have a question online. Terrific topic today. What is the process of joining a board? Is it similar to applying for a job with an interview process?
Great question. Gold star for that one. So every organization onboards and uses their governance committee differently. So the first thing I would say is reach out to the CEO of that organization or the executive director and tell them you're interested. And what should happen next is you'll either meet with the executive director or CEO or a member of the board, and you should have that lunch or that meeting so that you can start talking about what it looks like to be on the board. As a point of reference, I always ask people to check the online. It's so easy now. Everyone lists their board of directors. Get on there and start looking and see if you know someone that you can pick a brain, because what is interesting is a staff perspective of the board and a board's perspective of the board is going to be different. So you want to make sure that you're getting as much information as you can.
Exactly.
I'll also tell you that the Center for Nonprofit Management, they're sort of a clearinghouse in our community for people who are looking for boards. And so there are a lot of nonprofits that will call CNM and say, do you have someone with this expertise? So find something you're passionate about, reach out to the organization, and talk to them about going on the board. I love that. I want people to get involved.
The other thing that you can do, and we've encouraged other boards that we've worked with to do this, is maybe you're not going to start on the board.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you're going to start on a committee.
Totally.
And I think organizations whose boards allow non-board members to be
mm-hmm.
on their committees, it's great because it's a way to try before you buy, if you will, for both sides.
Absolutely. Right. And that's a great way. When you talk about what is the interview process, offer to get on a committee.
Yeah.
Because it will give you that chance.
I've got an expertise here. I'd love to help you.
Right.
And then you get a chance to look at it from the inside.
Yep. Absolutely. It's a great idea.
Excellent. So for those of our listeners who are on a leadership path, and most of them are, if not all, what would you say to them? What's one thing you would say to them?
So I think finding good mentors is really important. And I think advice is only as good as the source. So you've got to find people that you can invest with. And, if you look around at who's your inner circle, those people you call when you say I've got a problem or a struggle, if they don't know you as an individual and they only know you as a professional person, they can't give you great advice. They can give you good advice. But you want those people to hold you accountable, make sure that you're being honest and truthful, ask the tough questions. So get out there and find great mentors, people who will answer your emails, answer your phone calls in the middle of the night when you can't sleep, and you know will ask you the good ones.
Sure. What's the best advice you received?
Was
that it? Or,
yeah.
Or was it something else?
So because I was the child of entrepreneurs, every meal was an advice session, right? I mean, we talked about business at every turn, to the point that I truly didn't think I wanted to go in business because I thought it was boring because we were doing it all the time. But my dad was a self-made man. Graduated from college, I think didn't really know what he wanted to do, went into sales and was really good at it. And his advice is be honest. His advice is to be the most positive person in the office. People want you. If you're going to be the leader, they want you to see the faith, the hope, and all of that, and they want to know you've got a plan to get there. So it's really about when you lead, lead with intention. And I think having a good attitude is, it seems so silly, and it seems like something we should all control, but it's amazing how many leaders focus on the bad stuff, whether it's management, whether it's numbers, whether it's product. They focus on that so hard that they forget there are things that are working, and they lose the good attitude.
And in the season of Thanksgiving.
Yes, right.
We need to be remembering what we have to be thankful for.
Absolutely.
In the office as well as at home.
Always focus on the positive. There's no upside in focusing on negative things. If the old story, you know, celebrate every possible success you can, pat everybody in the back who's doing a good job, always sincerely, and if you want to say something negative, do it in private with the facts,
Absolutely. Not
the emotions.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that the sincerity is also a good point. Okay. And I think there are a lot of people that just try to say nice things to people.
Because I read it somewhere.
Yeah.
Or I read it somewhere. I'm just going to do it. But
totally. And if it's not true, then when you give the feedback, that also doesn't feel sincere.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, that sincerity is huge.
Exactly. What are you most proud of from your leadership journey so far? And you have a long road ahead of you.
God, I hope so. For me, right this minute, I am celebrating the fact that I have a great staff. And it did. It took us 3.5 years to get all the right people in the right places. And when we won the Infinite Wish Award a few weeks ago, what was super special to me is we had almost our entire staff there that night. And we don't always pay for everybody to a conference. It's an expensive week. It's hard. You know, we have to shut the office down in order to do this. So we took everyone this year because they had worked so hard last year. And sitting there with everybody and letting everybody celebrate that, we had 2 board members. I had 8 of the 9 staff were sitting at that table. That was awesome. And so to have that group of people you can celebrate with, that's my favorite part right now.
Next steps?
Yeah.
What will you be hoping to accomplish in the next year?
Yeah. So I'm a big goal setter. I love them. So we talked about the fact earlier that there are 230 kids that are diagnosed, and we're reaching about half, just over. So I want more outreach outside of the donut. We're really good. Davidson, Williamson County, crushing it. Where we're missing kids, we're missing volunteers, and frankly, I'm missing donors, is as you start to get out in those 38 counties. So I want to see some growth in what we do. I want people to know we're here. And Make-A-Wish sort of looks like a big organization that pops in, grants a wish, and then pops back to wherever it came from. And what I'm going to tell you is the 9 people that work for me, the 21 board members, and every kid that's getting a wish, they're our kids. This is our community. And so I want people to know we're here. We need the funds to grant wishes. Listen, I'm going to grant every eligible wish that comes in. Every kid that's approved is getting a wish. How fast they get that wish depends on the funding. So if we get the funding, we're going to grant these wishes faster. So I want people to know we're here. I want outreach. I want growth. I'm excited about it. And you know what? We have a plan that will allow us to increase resources. So my staff doesn't have to get stressed out over, well, that's great if Beth wants to grant 200 wishes or 9 people. Listen, we've got triggers in place. When we hit certain numbers, we're going to hire more people, and we're going to really increase what we do so that we can do it well.
Do you have a campaign per se, or are you just always approaching donors?
Yeah, we're always approaching donors. And we have a couple of events. You know, we've got a Stars for Wishes event in January. It's our gala. It's $300 a seat, so it definitely targets one socioeconomic group, like Joe. I was going to say, I'm hitting up everyone in the room right now. No longer subtle. So we have a gala in January. We have a Walk for Wishes in April. And the walk is a really grassroots way to get involved. So if you've got a company who's got community engagement goals, we can help you set up walk teams, raise money, come out, and make a presence in our community through the walk. And then we have a young leaders board. And our young leaders board is so crackerjack. They are 20 and 30-somethings. I don't think I have anyone in their 40s yet, but I think. They raise money for us. They volunteer for us. They really are advocates for what we do. And they have an event in August called Wine and Wishes, and it is exactly that. It's a lot of wine, a lot of fun. And so through those, we're hoping to hit different demographics, engage different people. But every day I'm out having meetings. We're talking to companies about how to engage their employees. We talk to donors about becoming major donors. We're talking about planned giving for people who are thinking about that. So it's a fundraising is a constant, necessary job. I mean, we're doing it all the time.
Sure.
And the more people we get involved, the lighter the load gets, which is great.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's always happening.
So for Beth,
yeah,
yourself personally,
yeah.
What's your next step in terms of improvement or skills that you want to be better at,
right,
or something that you've decided, you know, this is going to be my intentional focus over the next few?
All right, so I'm going on vacation in 2016. And it sounds silly, but I haven't had a good vacation in a while. You know, we've been very much in the entrepreneurial phase of this organization. When I came on 3 years ago, we weren't granting, we were granting right around 100 wishes. And about a $1.5 million budget. So we've been on this growth pattern intentionally to get us so that we were right-sized.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got this great staff. We've got things in place that are working. So 2016, I'm going on vacation. And I don't know where and I don't know when yet, but I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think from that, two things will happen. One, I get to recharge, which I think is so important. And we don't do that. I think a lot of leaders invest the way that I just did, and you spend 24/7 thinking about it. Even if you're not doing it, you're thinking about every dinner you go to, someone has to hear a make-a-wish story. That's been my life for 3.5 years. So I think it's important for leaders to step away. I think we also have to model good behavior, and I don't think I've been doing that. I mean, if I don't take a vacation, will my staff take vacations? I don't want them to think, you know, I return emails in the middle of the night because it works for me. But what I learned was that is kind of hell on your staff. And so
there's an expectation that comes with that.
Right. So I started doing delay delivery on emails, which was such a dumb, easy thing to do, but then no one's phone is dinging in the middle of the night. Now, at 8:10 in the morning, things might ding kind of hard, but at that point, we've moved forward. So there are behaviors that I want to change just to right-size the expectation.
Did you have a comment, Joe?
No, I was going to suggest to delay the deliveries of the emails, but you've
already
done that.
So you're already on that.
All the answers to my crises. I need this. Yeah, no, delay delivery. Huge answer to my prayer.
And about the vacation, take a lesson from the master over here, because no matter what position he was in, I don't think he ever missed his vacation. It was one of the first things
you
put on your calendar every year, right?
Well, yes. Everybody who's on the call right now, go to your calendar for next year and plug out your vacations now before your boss takes them away from you.
Right.
Right.
And,
yeah.
Oh, and chat with your family, too. Make sure everybody's on board with the same thing.
So, other thoughts you'd like to share about leadership before we ask for questions?
So, I met yesterday with a gentleman who's considering going from corporate to nonprofit. And one of the things that we talked about was everybody's a CEO for the first time at some point. And so, as you're making these shifts, it's not about are you ready to be the best at the role? It's are you willing to take on a challenge, learn about it, invest in it, and grow in that challenge. I think one of the misconceptions is to be a leader, you have to have all the answers. And the truth is you have to be willing to find the answers. You have to be willing to engage the right people in the conversations. So as you go through this, think about the fact that you're willing to take the risk. And you're going to mess up. I've messed up plenty. I own my mistakes. I think most of them are funny now, not all of them, but most of them. But I think it's about taking that risk and being willing to be vulnerable. You got to humble yourself. Leadership is a real fast way to be humbled. And you can humble yourself or they'll do it for you.
Exactly.
Either way.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
So, last question. Mm-hmm. What is your infinite wish?
Oh, gosh. Mine changes all the time. Because I'm around these kids with really good ones, my current one is I have a huge crush on Jimmy Fallon. And I want to just sit with him and talk, because if he is half as funny in a one-on-one conversation as he is, I think he would be totally entertaining the whole time. So Jimmy Fallon is currently my I wish to meet.
So if anybody out there has a connection, let us
know. Yeah, he's married with kids, so I want
to meet him.
If you
want to marry him.
If he wasn't, my wish would be different.
Okay, *7 for callers, or enter your question in the box and hit submit, and we would love to hear what you have to ask.
Okay, for the first *7 call question that comes in, I have available an autographed book called The Experience, The 5 Principles of Disney Service and Relationship Excellence, written by a friend of mine. And you also find some quotes in the book about me too, and about Tractor Supply Company. So I'm sure you will. You have to come by and pick it up. But it's called The Experience, and it's ready. Let's hear a question. Do we hear a question? If you don't give us a question, I'm going to start reading the book to you.
Well, Joe, with several of our callers being from out of state, we can sweeten the pot and tell them that we will ship.
Ship the book.
Ooh. Yeah, it's a little difficult on your way home. If you live in South Carolina or Georgia.
If you live in South Carolina or Georgia, there are Make-A-Wish chapters in your community, too, so feel free to engage with them.
That's right.
Star 7. Is that right, Star 7?
Star 7.
And just for folks that are on the call, we will have this call posted on our website tomorrow, and then we will tweet it out as well. So be on the lookout for that, and please share it with your colleagues who were unavailable for today's live call.
And okay. If we don't have callers, then you must have done a super job.
Did I answer every question?
Answered everything.
Genius.
We are so thrilled that you were able to join us.
Well, thank you so much. This was fun.
It's been a great conversation. Joe?
Beth, thank you very much. This has been great. And every time we get together, I just love hearing about Make-A-Wish. And it's a fabulous organization.
Thank you.
And I'm going to the gala in January for sure. So.
And that was recorded, right, Tom?
Yes.
Okay, perfect.
So, everybody, thank you all for joining us today. We look forward to seeing you in our next call.
In January.
In the meantime, that we still have our executive classes open. Go to our website, Scarlet Leadership, and also we have an emerging leader program coming up also. So thank you all very much for joining us.
Happy holidays.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yep.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Goodbye.